Thank you, Anna and Peter. What I want to focus on today is not just this global financial crisis, but how well prepared are we for the future? The Future of Work report was commissioned by Working New South Wales starting in 2005, and it's been an interesting journey over the last, 4 or 5 years. And the marked difference that we made in embarking on this particular research was to actually include unpaid work in the definition of work. And we believe that's pretty much a first for the way in which not only approaching the research, but actually trying to explore from a policy perspective for both government and organisations what it means. The reason for unpaid work is because what we do outside of our daily paid gig is how it has a major impact in terms of the communities and societies that we live with. You just imagine what Australia would be like if every volunteer organisation shut down today. Just have a think about it. I don't think we'd operate. We developed two snapshot scenarios, and the aim of the snapshot scenarios backed on research was to look at the trends that had impacted on work over the last 20 to 30 years. So we went back, looked at what people had spoken about 20 to 30 years ago, and then looked at what work was like today. So take yourself back, if you're old enough, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and think about what was work and what was life. Okay, 2001 Space Odyssey hasn't come about. Neither Star Trek. But there's a lot of things that were in those two series that have eventuated. Mobile phones, faxes, iPods, bionics, space travel, climate change. So, you know, we as a community, as a society, for most in Australia, I've got to say for most in Australia, have seen a significant change. But we do acknowledge that there are a lot of people in Australia and around the world who actually haven't had the advantage of seeing that shift. But if you put yourself forward to 2020, so the idea of scenarios is to actually shoot yourself into the future and endeavour to paint a picture based out of these trends to get an idea of what is the potential. And the idea of that is to actually try, and we're not particularly good at this as we managers, the current crisis is a bit of an indication of this, we're not particularly good at seeing often and noticing the trends and the issues. So having presented this, we were then asked to validate our findings by exploring what and how a sample initially of 60 thought leaders across Australia representing different sectors, government, private, not-for-profit, community, across Australia, thought about this. So in addition to that, we also asked them about uncertainties. Now, we did this in 2006, 2007. And surprise, well, I'm not surprised, economic downturn and recession was actually listed by literally 100% of the people. So I'm talking about ex-premiers, chairmen, CEOs, and the likes. The other two are not surprising, given that they were very topical also in 2006-07. But at the same time as they were identified as having an uncertainty, it was recognised with the economics that it was a blip on the horizon. And talking to Indigenous leaders, they actually said 2020, that's a short doorstop to 2050. So their actual perspective is far longer in horizontal thinking than ours. So as we looked at the uncertainties, we gained some key findings, so some of the comments that were to arise. The findings, and I've just put a few comments up there. Quality of life, work-life balance. As one CEO said quite interestingly, we only have one life, and work is a part of that. For some, there is not that election. For most of us here, we have that election. One that created a dominance is this notion of what happens after 60. Well, the median life expectancy is now beyond 60, so the notion of retiring at 60 is quite curious. One of the people I interviewed has retired four times and still going. I march on Anzac Day, being ex-Navy, if you saw that. And one of the gentlemen that I work with, that I'll be engaged with, is 92. We've convinced him this year that we're going to push him around in a wheelchair, but he still goes and works in the War Vets Home, helping people younger than him through the Vet Affairs system. So what does to retire mean? And in the paper, I actually had just been, just before he died, but a guy called Smokey Dawson was still running a one-hour radio show at the age of 99 from his home. His wife's 102 or 3 or something like that. So what does it really mean? The doctors have said to be healthy at 70 means I've got to be healthy at 20. So we need to think about that particular notion. The intergenerational views between Gen X, Gen Y and the older generation. What's interesting that came out of that was the breaking of trust that they have witnessed as their parents, family, etc., got retrenched. So the notion, we keep putting it back to them, but there was the notion that arose out of that. The skill divide. What was critical was, as one very senior leader said, if you get out of the capital cities and the regional cities, Australia, regional rural areas, is a failed state. Pretty strong words. Those people that we are lucky access are able to, but there are a significant number of people within this country who don't. And what's also interesting, given the unemployment figures, we have been running at an underutilisation rate of our people by 10%. Underemployment is never discussed. It is tracked by the ABS. Underemployment peaked at 7% when unemployment was at 4%. So we've been running at in excess of 10% underutilisation of people within this. Using another leader from overseas, women hold up half the world. We still haven't quite got that one right. I did have a role of putting women at sea within the Navy. That was a little job. So my experience is still pretty fresh in that area. And finally, globalisation. Throughout this research work, I'm always surprised that people forget that we are an island and a long way away from other sources of labour. And that the other countries, and recently I was over in Scandinavian countries, where the land bridge is there, they're tackling and attracting the same people that we are. The difference with Australia is that we're a very multicultural society, which is brilliant. However, the children of parents who were born in EU countries, for the most, are eligible for an EU passport. We are in a new world, and this will increase in 2020. So it is far easier for them with mobility. So those with the skills, it is far easier mobility and cheap for them to go back home. And we've got a lot of people out of Asia and Europe here who fall into that category. So they want them, we want them. During this project, many individuals are coming up and saying, okay, what's my specific occupation going to look like in 2020? What does this mean for me? How's it going to change my life? From a policy perspective, there's no way that I can answer everyone in this room to say, what does an accountant look like? What does an engineer look like? What does a tram driver look like? I can't say that. So what we did look at the end of this was we came up with this new notion of life role portfolio, of exploring what is a life cycle. So we've got product life cycles. What does the life cycle mean for we human beings in terms of our life? And I was astounded to find basically nothing. So we explored the notion of a life role portfolio, and that is the notion of time investment in the different activities or roles that we do. So think of what you do today, you did 5 years ago, and may do in 5 years' time. How has that differed? And what's critical is that the decisions that we make are based on the time taken and relative cost of travel to get to and from that activity, the potential exposure to risk that that activity gives us, access to affordable accommodation close to wherever that activity is going to take place, being competent and healthy to undertake that activity, the different life stage requirements that you have, so just getting married, just starting a family, having an older parent, and that's going to be something, this elder leave is going to be critical with extended life extended life age, and the values and worldview that we have at the time. What we identified was that these policy areas are absolutely critical to people being able to engage in any life role activity. We're not suggesting at all that there is a perfect balance. We're all individuals, we're all unique. But the macro policy mix of government and organisations, combined with clarity about an aspiration, which has been sorely missing in this country, better informs us of what there is to engage in today and may be able to engage in the future. So that's what we basically came to. And our final conclusion was that the future of work is about the competitive future of Australia. If we don't get the human capital bit right, what does the lucky country mean? So I'm not sure how many of you actually know the origins of the term the lucky country. The people know of Donald Horne, a few people, a lot of shake of heads. Whilst I've used it, and I used it to come back to the requisite 5-second elevator grab. So we've been talking about this for a while, and people are going, yes, we're in a big boom, we don't need to know about it. Yes, it's fantastic. But what's fascinating is Donald Horne wrote this in 1964, is to ponder some 45 years later. I'm not sure what Donald Horne would have thought about Australia in 2020 in 1964. But Australia is a lucky country run mainly by second-rate people who share its luck. Do we deserve our current fortunes or misfortunes? What do we need to do to underpin success and good fortune for the next generations? Do we create luck? Or do we rely on luck? You may have gathered from the trend slide three underpinning policy areas, interrelated, came out across everything that we did. Health, education, and this thing we call community infrastructure. Community infrastructure is the physicality of you and I feeling safe to walk out the door to engage. And some research in Victoria showed that crime rates were down, but people were still concerned and did not want to leave home. So people aren't going to do volunteer jobs if they can't leave home. In New South Wales, we had surf life saving where people, they couldn't get people to engage. There was a discussion that I was at about talking of either shutting two beaches down or asking people to pay because they couldn't get surf lifesavers to go. You may recall the violence that occurred on one of the beaches there. So the future of work is dependent upon that. Now, what do these mean? Well, think about it at the individual level. You have to be educated and skilled to get a job. Think of you sitting here. You're a good example. But you have to be healthy, not only to go to work, but to get that education. You have to be secure to get there. We engaged with third generation unemployed people where the kids didn't go to school because their parents had not gone through that process. So their kids weren't going through there. It's generational. Can we afford that? At an organisational level, it's critical. We talk about this notion of talent. I get concerned about the war for talent. But organisations need capable and healthy people. So there's a responsibility about keeping them healthy. Asbestos. So the future of work is going to raise some new health issues for organisations. I'm not sure whether you're following the debate of the mobile phones. I'm curious as to whether radio hazards, I grew up with it, from mobile phones is going to be the next asbestos. there is a lot of research. In fact, in Finland, the warnings are already out, and that's the home of Nokia. So we need skilled, healthy and safe workplaces, and that's going to change. We also, at a state and national level, provide the policy guidance to everyone else. They own it. So what does it mean to be a lucky country, and where do we stand? Well, let's look at it. Education. Rupert Murdoch in the Boyer Lectures this year said Australia has a 19th century education system. And I was surprised in my research to find that in the 19th century we had one of the best education systems in the world. Health. We rarely talk about the health of the, regularly talk about the health of the economy and health of the nation, but really about the systems and the mindset that make health. And the research around the world shows that when health expenditure gets to 10% of GDP, there's a tipping point. And we're very close to that tipping point. And by the tipping point, health expenditure increases and health decreases. So that's the challenge. And then community infrastructure. On the World Competitiveness Infrastructure rankings, we are in the last quartile, 44th, of the OECD nations. So what's our trade-off? Can we afford to trade this off? Our answer is, I don't believe so. So what's the solution? The aim of the research was originally to create a strategic conversation, which we've been doing, and we're here today. One of the outcomes of the leadership team that we've been speaking to is we do not have the strategic leadership to make the change required. So we need to develop strategic leadership, and I'm pleased to say that we've been working with organisations such as NAB in this space and past exposure with Woolworths and McDonald's, etc. So there are organisations out there who are doing it, but we desperately need a leadership which actually thinks holistically and systemically across the network. How do we get to the current economic crisis? There's been a lot written, but sadly has not made mainstream media. That is the role of poor and flawed management theory and its role in guiding where we are today. We need operational capacity and capability. We were talking outside. We have devalued critical community occupations of health, education, policing, etc. We cannot recruit them in certain states. Absolutely have devalued what they mean, and we need those numbers. And I am rather embarrassed to say that if you want a copy of the report, it's available, but we actually didn't put a community level up program in this. And the community problem-solving program of the kids is there, and that has actually made significant inroads. So I'd like to leave you using a Chris Orchard diagram, the challenges that we face. Those who see forward and those who, for a whole variety of reasons, aren't able to move. And all the work we've done in change is we want to get rid of something. Getting rid of something is not the same as getting what you want. It's over to you. And I thank CEDA for keeping the dialogue going. Thank you.